Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to the Driving More Show. Hi, I'm Paul and I'll be your host this evening. Bit of a shortened round this weekend, hence where did all the games go? I don't know. Bit silly. I don't know why they've got these, why suddenly half the team seems to take the weekend off. It's not like, okay, fine, public holidays and stuff. Conflict, do you think sports teams should have public holidays off?
No. What public holidays? It's the wrong weekend. I mean, that should have been last weekend over Easter, shouldn't it?
That's right.
No. You're a professional sports person. You don't get any holidays whatsoever. No. You don't do anything during the week anyway. Training's fun. It should be fun. If you love your sport, it should be fun. It's not a job.
Now, one of the ones that I loved this weekend, which was even made it up as a talking point on the stuff, but I spotted it before then. One of their five talking points of the weekend. Now, one of them, I remember two of these talking points were about the Super Rugby Alpaki. One of their talking points was Sean Stevenson getting the weekend off as an All Blacks release. He played one All Blacks game last year, folks. And he's got a weekend off for All Blacks release. And boy, oh boy. That one seemed a bit, next off the Triple T, we're having a weekend off next weekend for All Blacks release as well.
He's an All Black, isn't he?
Brett Cameron. We can't have Brett Cameron playing all these games.
No. We need him. He's our best number 10 in the country.
All these one cap All Blacks, they must have a weekend off at least.
And then the one that plays for the Rebels needs a week off. Used to play for the Hurricanes, you know, the midfielder, Matt Proctor. He needs a week off. You know,
No. If he's not going to be underneath the wing of New Zealand rugby to look after him nicely, then tough. He has to play every game. If that's what happens when you're overseas, you get treated like a commodity. No one loves
class citizen.
The fact that Carl Heyman is going through early onset dementia, and no one from New Zealand rugby has reached out to help him. Or the Players Association, or what was the other one? Or ACC. But no, we look after our players here in this country.
So they probably don't remember who he is, because they've probably all got dementia as well.
Well, there isn't that. I mean, the way the administrators run the game, you do actually wonder sometimes. There we go.
Fiery start.
It's a Player Association group with New Zealand Rugby. Absolutely. And look, and for All Blacks who actually play All Black games, I get it. I understand. But for someone who's played one game last year for the All Blacks, it seems a little bit over the top. Because he didn't go through the World Cup, did he?
No.
So his season finished in like September, right? And he had a plenty big enough off-season. It's not like he was at the Rugby World Cup as a non-player up until November and had a short off-season. He had a full off-season because he finished playing way earlier than that. So... Dr. writes, I agree with All Blacks rest weeks. Don't get me wrong. It's just the one game player getting an All Blacks rest seems a little bit strange. Let's be honest on the top of that. So, did you spot any rugby news over the last week that's of interest to you?
I was expecting you to have a big list of rugby news items. That suddenly takes the first half an hour of the show, doesn't it?
We've got two items. Actually, one of them which you told me about was, I was expecting you to talk about Roy Guard here. That was my handover to you to talk about Roy Guard.
That feels like ages ago. That was last week.
Now, we said he was injured last week. We didn't say how long he was injured for. Now we know how long, right?
Jeez. Something like, 4 to 6 months or something he's out for, isn't it? He's had surgery already up in Auckland. So, he's pretty much out till end of your tour, really. I guess he's going to be missing Rugby Championship, rest of Super Rugby, and everything else in between. So, look, does it matter? Not really, because we know what he's offering. Would have been good for him to play? Yes, sure. But give him this injury now, and instead of when it matters later on, I say it's okay. What's done is done. I still blame the referee for this injury, right? This is still the referee's fault. And this further, I think I'm going to have to get on a bandwagon here about this. You know, I've jumped on, with the James Lowe being an All Black. That was an utter disaster. That was my biggest campaign to date so far. But I think referees getting in way of play is right up there with something we need to sort out in rugby. It's really getting bad. It really is getting quite bad. The amount of referees getting just hit by players, run into players, squashed into rucks, it seems to be getting increasingly more and more and more and more than I've ever seen before in recent time. I don't know what you reckon, but to me, I think it's becoming a bit of an issue when a player has to change his decision or his path or his pass or whatever because of the referee being in the way. To me, that's an issue. And when it results in things like Roy Guard's injury, who had to change his path twice to avoid a referee, turn right around, and then the angle of the tackle obviously caused the injury. If the referee wasn't there, he would have gone to his right, yes, and taken contact or pass, whatever. Instead, he went to the referee, stopped, pivoted around, hit the referee again, pivoted right round to his left side before getting tackled of a player going straight through. So to me, that is an issue when you've got now not only causing problems in play, but also long-term causing injuries for players as well. This is an issue.
I mean, it's a little bit over the top to say causing injuries. That was an unfortunate result of it. In that situation, pass the ball into the ref and you get yourself the scrum, right? Because if the referee presses to touch, if the ball touches the ref, it restarts with you on that one.
If you're like rocking momentum, you're rolling forward, you're playing good, you don't want to do that. You know, if you're on the back foot and you're in your own 22, yeah, that's perfect. You can reset, do a set piece clear with a bit of space and time, sure. But, you're not always wanting to that. We're not all blooming, Nick Whites here. Not everyone is a Nick White that wants to just try and milk every little sausage that they can, right? To me, that was avoidable. But the thing is, like, where does it end? I think it became a lot worse during the World Cup, and it's kind of just pressed on from there. And yeah, maybe it is. They're policing things too harshly, trying to get more in to see rucks. But I mean, yeah, they've got to get out of the way somehow. Sort it out.
The Marie Dirks with you, but if we name these shows after what was said in it in the recordings. Milking sausages would definitely be the show title for this week. What the hell is that? Anyway, I just realized what that's an OnlyFans thing. That's disgusting. Anyway,
where's your get at? What's going on here?
Anyway, never mind. We'll put that to one side. That happened. Look, it's a real shame that he is injured because, I understand what you're saying. He doesn't need to prove himself for the next World Cup kind of cycle. But to me, this was his opportunity to kind of take ownership of the jersey going into these mid-year tests followed by the Rugby Championship. And it's a real shame that he won't be there. Listening, and we're going to have to talk about this. We'll talk about this podcast a couple of times, but listening to the Super Rugby Aotearoa Rugby Pod, which is basically the Sky one, and they're like, "Oh yes, well clearly, this puts one of Steve's favourite scrum halves from the Blues as first choice as Christie as number one," and then they're like, "Well clearly, then you must take Razors must be picking TJ Perinara for his experience. And then we're looking at one of three after that, maybe Fakatava or a Roygaard. And they keep mentioning Roygaard, but never mentioning Xavier Rowe, who quite often gets picked as first choice at the Chiefs. So it's absolutely, it really is kind of amusing as to who they think those scrum halves should be. But yeah, I personally can't see TJ being back in the All Blacks squad. Christie, absolutely, he'll be the experienced one. And then you have a couple of, because you can't really go in with three guys who've not been capped at all.
Why not?
Or one cap triple T.
Why not?
As your India squad, you're not. No, that's you're gonna have one guy.
When else are you gonna do it? When else are you gonna do it? Never.
You don't take three totally uncapped players in if you can help.
It's England. As long as you've got a fullback that can catch, who cares? No, I mean, I say that in jest because England have changed their play a lot over the Six Nations. Look, the only way I can see Perinara anywhere near that squad is in as a training, experienced leadership mentorship role, right? Yeah. As a player, I guess if that's one way you want to squeeze him in, but geez, if that happens to me, you're taking two uncapped guys with him, right? You're taking like a Rowe and someone else, and you take him to be like the leader, and hey, maybe he plays off the bench, right? I'm okay with that. I'm well more okay with that than I am with Finley Christie being anywhere near that team. How he escaped that push out of the plane away over Scotland, I don't understand. But yeah, it's like so much depth at nine, and here we are concerned about, oh no, our front runner, best player we know is the best player now in the country in nine is injured. Okay, that's fine. Now we can build depth because we know he's here. We know what he offers. We're not finding anything out from him. Let's find out what's down here. Let's find out 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 or something along those lines. Let's find out, hey, is Xavier Rowe up to the task? Can Fakatava like carry a series? Because we've not really seen him as the guy ever, really. He's kind of just been like, hey, have this 6 minutes, you know? Who's up to that next standard? Can Christie carry the team? Okay, I hate on him all the time, but can he start a test match and play 60, 65 minutes and put in a good performance at an international level against, let's be honest, England is a pretty good team. And I think they'll put a lot of pressure on that position and a lot of pressure on his play. So this is a good chance to find something else. I would certainly prefer, as much as I rate Roygaard and really like him, give me the injury to him instead of any other 10, probably 12 or 13, let's be honest, because those are the issue areas where already we're going to be just finding out. We don't know who number one really is, or two or three. Okay, McKenzie, right? You got your McKenzie, you got your Arnie's, you got your Barrett, but after that, we don't know. So I think out of any position, we can probably expand our top guy and learn a bit more. Nine is probably one of the few ones.
Oh, interesting one. Seeing it that way, yep. Another comment, yeah. Some old journalists pull the lazy story like Sam Whitelock being asked back. We said that was a bad idea anyway. We disagreed with that one as well. So, on that one. Now,
terrible.
Now the other news story, which is a much more serious one, is what happened down in Hastings last weekend, where there was a game, a club game. Now, first off, I was amazed that actually Hastings has got a third division, because my God, that's a lot of teams they must have down there, because most places in the country are struggling to get out first teams and to have a B division, never mind a third division. So hats off to them for that. But unfortunately for them, a game between Tamati and the Young Maori Party. Now, by the way, Young Maori Party rugby team there is a totally independent one from any actual political association. So why it's called that, I've got no idea, historically reasons. But anyway, so it's not actually associated with the actual Maori Party that's in Parliament. It's just a totally different team. So they had their game, and unfortunately their game had to be called off or finished early because the referee wasn't sure about the safety of everybody on the pitch. Part of that there was by the sounds of it was that they didn't rope off the pitch. So anyway, so it sounds like spectators were getting onto the pitch and getting involved in the game, which is not good. And then as the Young Maori Party were driving away in their van, they got shot at by a shotgun. And the police have pointed out that So this is a if you want to get some more history about this stuff, it's Simon Hughes has given a bit of history around it how long this sort of stuff was. But anyway, the police have said that that this actually attack was gang linked, unfortunately, both these teams have got gang associations and different gangs as well. Now, anyone who is surprised that gangs are involved or gang members are involved in rugby shouldn't be. At the end of the day, looking at some of the stats. That are found 70% of gang members are Maori, 12% European, 9% Pacific Island. Look, our Maori Pacific Islanders are just like Europeans, like playing rugby. We have a high proportion of those people playing rugby. So unsurprisingly, some of those people will be gang members as well. Now, most cases, the vast majority of cases across this country, rugby clubs are seen as being neutral ground. Where you'll get gang members actually of different gangs playing on the same team, along with your local policeman as well. This is from personal experience. I know this happens. So in the vast majority of cases, rugby clubs are a place where they actually come together and not conflict. Actually, have a safe place where they can actually be in the same place, same room, and maybe if not get on, at least not be antagonistic too much to each other, because otherwise they get thrown out by the rugby club. And they all like playing rugby. We all like playing rugby, so hence, unsurprisingly. This is very rare. It's really sad that it's actually happened. I mean, any kind of shooting is sad, let's be honest. Thankfully, no one was hurt in this. Let's hope that it doesn't happen again. But as I say, this kind of thing is extremely rare when you think that. I was more amazed by the fact that Hawke's Bay Rugby had a third division than I was perhaps actually that this happened. there was a sort of gang altercation at a rugby club at some point during the year. Those are my kind of thoughts on it, Steve.
It's a bit sad, isn't it? It's a bit sad, but like you say, if you're surprised about any of that sort of stuff, the sad thing about it is that you probably shouldn't be surprised about it, because sport clubs and their affiliation with people and with gangs and stuff like that is becoming increasingly more common, isn't it? So it's sad. It's disappointing to see.
It's a reflection of society, right? At the moment, we know we've got gangs in New Zealand, unfortunately. And so some of those people are going to be rugby players at the end of the day.
But that's what I mean. It's been around forever. But it's becoming more prominent, as in something you see of. Because, like I was going to say, that the safe areas of things aren't becoming as sacred safe areas as they once were. Because those rules are kind of becoming a bit more blurred than they used to sort of be and respected as to what they are. So, yeah, they've already always been there. I mean, if you think it's not been a problem 30 years ago, then again, you're kidding yourself. It's been a problem. It's been an issue. It's been something that's been around for a long time. But sadly, you kind of hope that, like you say, those safe areas could stay safe areas for the players and the fans and, you know, sort that crap out. Go to a shed somewhere. I don't know. Go to the wharf. I don't know. But it's just sad that it brings a sport into these sorts of things. And it's... The flip side of that is it becomes, for people who aren't involved in that sort of stuff, that just want to play sport, is it a safe thing for kids to be going to be getting involved in, young adults, whatever they want to be called these days, going to those sorts of things? Is it safe? Is it going to be something they can go through? But you got to remember, that's still your pathway, isn't it? If you want to be a rugby player professionally, you've got a pathway through those clubs and through those systems. So it's a bit of a shame. And is there other sports now that, you know, parents and things might be looking at and going, well, is rugby a safe sport for my child to play? Is it safe for them to go play basketball? Is it safe for them to go play, not league, but definitely not league, because it's been down this path before. But you know what I mean? You start to look at those other things, because obviously safety is the number one priority more than hey, is this 1% chance that my son's going to be an All Black? Is it worth him possibly getting shot or tied up in gangs? That's the downside of it, sadly. So you kind of hope that they find a way to maybe work with it into a solution of being like, hey, we know this is the deal, but, you know, reaching some sort of middle ground to make the clubs and the fields a safe place, you know, with a relationship with gangs. Oh, that's the thing that we kind of hate, right? But how else do you do it? They're not the sort of people you can fight fire and fire with and be like, you're not allowed here anymore. You know, it's probably going to work with them.
That doesn't help anyone, I don't think. What I would say is that we have thousands of rugby clubs in this country. Mm-hmm. We have thousands of club rugby games happening every weekend, and age group games, and across this season, we've had one thing reported. Now,
oh, for sure,
is this the only one that's any incident that's happened? Probably the only one with a gun. Yes, but is it the only time there's been a little bit of an altercation after people have played a rugby game and had a few beers? Of course not. But as I say, it is extremely rare. Rugby is safe in New Zealand. It's a bit like, is crossing the road safe? You know, some people get run over, folks. So you could argue it's not. But just like we think crossing the road is safe, going to a club rugby game is as well, folks. This is extremely rare, but it's very sad it has happened. What I would say is that most clubs and most communities sort it out in their own way. What we don't want to happen here is some heavy-handed sort of regulations or rules as to how and if you're on some sort of register, you're not allowed to be at a rugby club, this kind of stuff to come in, because I think that would be the wrong way about it. I think, as I say, at the moment, the clubs and the communities deal with this normally. I think that's probably the best way for us to go forwards on it.
I think it's something that you need to kind of look at now too, because if it's not, it will only get worse. It's only going to become more common, right? But yeah, I agree. Like I say, you can't fight fire, because you're literally going in with a torch, you know, to someone who's got a pool of lava or something. You're not winning that, and it's only going to make situation worse and aggravate people, which is not what you want to do. That's what I mean. You've got to be very amicable about that, this sort of situation, right? And make sure that and you know what works for a club in Hastings isn't going to work for a club in Dunedin, isn't going to work for a club in South Auckland, right? So it's going to be a base by base sort of situation that they're going to have to accept. And of course, what happens in those clubs is very different too, and so how they deal with it. So yeah, these clubs, keep on top of it.
Yeah, these two clubs need support straight away. So it's going there and talk to the guys, say, look, hello guys, this clearly is not acceptable. We can't be having this happening. Mm-hmm. How do we work with you guys to make sure this doesn't happen again?
Yeah
absolutely. That's true. Ganglias won't like the attention like that brings. Absolutely, they won't.
Especially if it's pinpointed too as like this group or people with this group. Yeah, that's bad. Always.
Yep. So,
rugby.
We actually had some rugby the weekend. Not very much of it though, because we only had four games, which to me is rather than the normal six. Why they can't just do one, drop one, have two teams each round and drop it down to five rather than going all the way down to four for 3 weeks? I guess in some ways they're like, look, it's a bitter pill, let's take it and it's all done. And no team ends up with kind of like a rest week in week one or week two, and then no rest. So it makes it kind of fair from that point of view. But from a viewer spectacle, not a great way of doing it this weekend. On the old Super Rugby tips in the weekend, by the way, yay, the multi won. Yes, all four from four. Yes, so $5.45 back from my
$2. What was it paying? Five.
From my $2, yep.
Whoa!
Well, this was the only game that we didn't go with the favourite, I think, was Rebels versus Fiji and Drua, where everyone said you jumped to this Drua bandwagon that really wasn't there. I've had to be careful, actually, with this week's picks, that I didn't jump on a bandwagon. I had to go away, have a look at some results, make sure that my feeling matched up with the facts, but we'll get to that. We'll get to that when we get to picking time. Blues versus Force, then. I don't think we'll be talking about this one for very long. Force actually managed this game pretty well for the first 10 minutes, right? They controlled the territory. They controlled them. They controlled where the game was played. They controlled who had the ball, and they did pretty well for the first 10 minutes. Then the Blues touched the ball. And after that, it was all one-way traffic, really. The Force hadn't got any points. And then the fact that there were only 8 clean breaks for the Blues is a bit of a surprise. I thought it would be a bit higher than that. Some of the stats, 17 turnovers by the Force, rather than 11 by the Blues. If you can't control the ball, 12 scrums for the Blues. I mean, how many knock-ons is that for the Force? Only 6 for the Force. So the Blues playing... actually, the Force made more passes than the Blues, 120 to 188. But the Force ran a lot less, like 200 less meters or 250 less meters than the Blues. Just some weird stats like that. Most of this game was played in the Blues half. 34% territory the Blues had, and they scored 50 points. Yes, because when they went, they just went, right? They didn't have to go through phases. So from that point of view. But Caleb Clark again, another good game. But Steve will probably point out, not the strongest of opposition, but he led the game for meters run. And to be fair to him, look, with 9 runs, only Riccatelli and Akira Iwani had more runs. So at least he got himself involved in the game rather than sitting out on the wing waiting for the ball, which is a bit more like what AG Lamb did. So at least he got himself involved in the game. I'm not sure there's much really to talk about in this one, is there?
I mean, if I was running through turnstile defence, I could rake up 90 metres and 9 runs as well, to be honest. Like, let's be fair. There wasn't really much in the way of opposition, which is kind of sad because I thought the Force... Okay, they didn't promise a lot, right? But this is an utterly disgraceful performance. Sure, they weren't expecting to win, but to lose in this sort of fashion is nothing short of... I mean, it's not even disappointing. It's criminal. It's horrific. It's diabolical. What other big words can I think of that are in my limited vocabulary? Look, they and as the match wore on, you could see their confidence got lower and lower, and their determination, their willingness got lower and lower and lower, and the heads were dropping. And it concerns you. They think where do they look? You know, like they seem like they're like, we got no ideas left. Like, we don't know what to try to stop them. We don't know what to do to get the ball back. We don't know where to kick it. They just look kind of clueless by the end, which is probably the biggest concern when you've got a number of players, especially in fairly pivotal positions, that are experienced guys. Like, you think of the Donaldsons, semi-experienced, but I'm looking more at your Nick Whites. Stewart's in your midfield, especially guys that should be able to control a game and dictate a tempo and where the game is played. Those guys dropping their heads and losing their confidence, that concerns me the most about the Western Force going through that game. This is the last 2 weeks have made the Blues look extremely good. And what's more of a concern, it's made Akira Iwani look really good. It's made Caleb Clark look really good. It's made Hoskins to continue to look really, really good, which concerns me.
Hoskins, come on, he's a decent player.
No. They don't have the mental fortitude. This is what I mean. They look fantastic when things go their way, as does most of those sort of wishy-washy players. The second they get a bit of heavy resistance, the second they come up against someone who's actually going to make them go outside of plan A and try and do something a bit different, or try and actually put in 110% effort, then I want to see those guys perform. Then I want to see what they can do. That's my concern. Yes, they look fantastic when they're running straight over the top of a guy who really just wants to go home. And his home isn't even the Western Force generally when you look at most of these players. So that's my concern. Great for the Blues. Good confidence. Hey, they've done it twice in a row now. They can be like, hey, we're shit hot. So they'll be looking great. They'll look great. Hey, I will give a shout out, though, to that chap that played in midfield, Corey Evans, a name, yes, I'm not too 12. Familiar with, yeah, but looked really, really good. So starting to blood some good players coming through as well. And I like to see that they're actually giving some guys some game time and some opportunities out there. So, yeah, look, I agree with you, Lamb looked very lazy on the wing for a game that it was very easy to make meters. Every time he got the ball, he kind of just looked like he only had one idea, to run towards the sideline and try out pace people when he's not really a fast winger. He's more of a, he's quick, sure, but he's more of a power play winger, right? So, yeah, I'll, look, putting in a work on for them, but I kind of, last week I was like, okay, the Blues are just blowing through there and they'll be like, yep, that was sweet. We haven't really learned anything. But now they've done it 2 weeks in a row. I kind of concern myself as to where they go next week, because it's on the bye, so they're not going to be concerned about that whatsoever. But after that, 3 weeks, where you've been on a training run slash training itself, and then you've got to come up against...
Rumbies. The Rumbies. Rumbies.
Now that is going to be a test, okay? Okay, Hoskins to 2-2. I'd like to introduce you to Charlie Kale, who is going to smoke the living snot out of your little pretty pink boots. That's a different game, right? So that's my concern for the Blues. Do it against the Brumbies, and then you'll get my respect on that performance. But I'm worried about the Western Force. Do they have a bye next week, or are they in at all? Oh, they've got a bye as well. So, yeah, they've got a lot of thinking to do before they come back against the Crusaders in round nine. But that is over in Perth. So, hey, Perth, the Western Force are becoming like the draw, right? And it makes sense because these
they always have been to a degree. They've always been a home team.
I feel like they've developed leaving. Not recently, clearly, but you know, over the last couple of years, they've got better slowly but surely, or shown a bit more. They've taken a bit of a backward step, but yeah, I think going back home, and of course, because weren't they? They were in Fiji last round too, weren't they? The Force didn't they get smoked in the rain?
That was Rebels, wasn't it? No, that's Force, right?
There was the Force. So that's what I mean. Travel wise, they've gone Perth to Fiji, to Auckland. So, you know, get them back home, a week to rest and look over this abomination. And I hope that they find some sort of solace and some sort of confidence in their abilities to get back to where they were 3 weeks ago.
But this also shows, this going back to, you can't buy a team, right? If you're going to change the number of players every year, you need to build and get that continuity, get the connections within the team and build it over time. So that's part of the, that's also part of their problem as well. But when you've got the top team after this round versus the bottom team, it's going to be a blowout. A couple of comments in the chat about undermining the quality of competition. People wanting to go down to 10, or suggestions that 10, this supports the kind of the 10 team comp and all that kind of stuff. Look, at the end of the day, the problem this weekend was they scheduled two games that you knew were going to be 50 point plus wins, right? Or we're going to 50-point plus games. They schedule this one and the Chiefs versus Moana. The scheduling, when you've got only four games for the weekend, don't put on your games that you know are going to be one-sided. Bury those when you've got some other competitive games that people can talk about, rather than people, rather than a weekend when there's actually nothing else to talk about. Therefore, this is what the narrative is going to be, because, hey, there's nothing else to talk about. We can't talk about the Chiefs going down to Christchurch and losing to the and the Crusaders picking up their first win of the season. If that happened this week, we wouldn't be talking about this so much. We would all, everyone, or would be, at least in the media, they'd all be talking about that game. So this, you know, by bad scheduling, by bad administration, you're giving fuel to storylines you don't want to be told. Simon's asking, is it true that Curtly Beale has signed on with Western Force?
Yep.
Oh God, why have they let him back in?
He's replacing Harry Potter, who's out for the season.
Okay, I can see why they've searched around and gone, hell, who the hell can we get as an injury replacement, and gone, there's nobody apart from this guy, and they've ended up with him. Okay, I can see how he's ended up there, but yeah, not a good idea. Let's be honest.
It's not bad for them. It's experience. I mean, who else would you go for?
Anyone that's not going to be disruptive to my team environment, who's going to come in and be and actually be counterproductive to my club culture, which, let's be honest, he's got a history of doing.
In Perth?
Well, not in Perth, clearly, but he has a history of doing it elsewhere.
No. The Perth is like the anti-disruptor sort of place. I mean, what do? They mine and they go to sleep. That's about all they really do there. So, I mean, if you're going to shove the guy away somewhere and say, don't cause any trouble, Perth is probably one of the few places you can shut him away and say, don't cause any trouble here currently. But I'm talking in terms, okay, personality-wise, maybe sure, but in terms of his playing ability and his experience, that's, he could add absolutely something to the team. Like, he's, sure, if, whatever sort of capacity he plays in, who knows? I mean, do you really want a backline of Donaldson, Stewart, and Beal? Like, if they play Beal at 15, like he predominantly has, it becomes too much playmakery and not enough finishery, right? Who's going to really? I mean, and Bailey Kunzel as well. Shit, I forgot about him. So you've got three, four tens in your backline of seven players.
Will somebody please run straight? Sound straight, exactly. Please, somebody. Great.
Yes. I mean, Chase Tiatia, look, in that Blues game, to go back to that, Chase Tiatia is the only man in that team that in the 78th minute was still out there going, give me the damn ball, and like taking on three defenders and actually still making, 1 or 2 meters. No one else had that. They were all clueless. I feel sorry for him because I think Chase Tiatia, yeah, sure, he's been getting a lot of props because he is actually a standout in that team. But I think he's a lot better player than even you're getting recognition from in that team. He is a standout guy that doesn't just sit on the wing. He probably shouldn't be a winger, but his abilities in finishing and his IQ, his rugby IQ, make him a very, very good player. Just put a shirt on him. I don't care what number it is. As long as it's double figured, as long as he's on that team, that's all that matters.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't mind seeing the centres. You say actually get to run the game a bit more. But the he's a very good Super Rugby player, right? Club player. Yes. He's not quite international. I don't think we'd work there. But as a club. In Northern Hemisphere club, not Southern Hemisphere, not New Zealand club, but as in Northern Hemisphere club rugby, NP, Super Rugby, he is a top operator. He's a very good player at that level. A bit like another player who came back who's taken a lot of flack that played this weekend for the Brumbies off the bench, De Bresini, another guy who's actually pretty good at this level. International? No, I don't think so. But at NPC, he was very good at this level. He's good. He's a fantastic squad player. To have that kind of guy coming off the bench is massive. What the Crusaders would give for someone like De Bresini at the moment, the guy is look, he's a very good player at this kind of level. Mm-hmm.
It's that double-edged sword too, isn't it, with those sort of guys too, because they're so versatile. That they are so they kind of the X factor thing is the fact that you put them on the bench and they can come on 10, 12, 13, 15. And if you're really at a stretch, you can shove them on a wing too. Like a guy like De Bresini, but more of a tier. Let's be honest, if that backline fell apart, you could shove him literally. Hey, I'd be comfortable with him sitting at 10. You know, if things got really dire straits, you know, he's smart enough not to do anything really stupid. So, hey, just get a few more guys like him. Don't look for the global superstars. Just look for those hardworking, determined guys who are going to keep trying. Hey, if you lose by 50 points, at least lose by 50 points with a head up trying to score that last try or getting something on the board, which they need more of. I feel like a lot of them did drop their heads around that early second half. I think the Blues scored very quickly after halftime, didn't they? And kind of went from the fourth score next, they could get back into this game and then... they conceded a really easy try. Well, okay, that's not happening.
It was also like 28-0 at the halftime, or 28-3 or something.
If it becomes 28-10, if you got 28-10 with 38 minutes to go, you know, dreams alive. You know, it's the fact of going in and refreshing at halftime, coming out, getting reward, and your confidence doesn't go from, okay, we're 28 points behind. It goes, hey, we're 7 points up.
Yeah, no. Start refresh, if they scored a try, I think that would have helped them as well.
Yeah.
By just knocking over a penalty, you can like have only got three.
I'm talking about tries.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if they pick up a try, I think probably look. Actually, we can do this again now. We can actually make up. Maybe we can catch up something or get something out of this. Maybe you're losing bonus point or something. You're 28-0, when you're 28-3 down or whatever, and they've scored four converted tries and you scored one penalty, you're like, if we can kick as many penalties as we feel like. We ain't catching this. We ain't getting anything out of this game. So there was no personal glory. There was no losing bonus point of chance. There was nothing about it. And so, hence, I can see why the head's dropped.
And who can hold their head up high from that game for the Force? Like, Tiatia, for me, I thought was very tenacious. But no one else really. Like, when you look at the names, you know, like guys who have been so good in previous years and even this year. And you look at them now and go, you didn't even do yourself proud on an individual basis of standing up for your team.
The let's have a quick look through some of the defensive stats on this side of things. So things like maybe Tuakapi Pulu, the prop, nine tackles made, none missed. So I mean, went through a bit of a shift there, but you're right. I mean, it's tough finding someone who's got some. Again, one of the things we've talked about before about Nick White, six made tackles, five missed. If your forwards are allowing him to make 11 tackles, you've got a problem, boys. Right? That's not his job. So hence forwards, on the whole, yeah, some of them have got some nice stats on that kind of thing. Reed Princep, 15 tackles, one missed, etc. But you've allowed Nick White to make 11. That, no, you shouldn't be allowing that. And Reed Princep is one of those players who should be a leader in his team, who has shown himself to be Super Rugby standard, but he's not quite doing that Chase Tiatia thing of taking that next step, really.
What surprised me more with Nick White too is I find Nick White, if you think about Nick White as a player over years, you know, for Wallabies and some of the Brumbies, he's a very leader player too. You know, he's the sort of guy I would have thought would have been like scruff of neck, you know, grabbing players by the ear and being like, dude, come on, you know.
Yeah.
And even not seeing him do that raised like even more alarm bells, because for him to drop a head is, you know, as one of the guys that, as much of a prick and a grub that he is, that's what makes him. But that's what he's got, right? That's his determination.
No, you should be a prick and a grub to the end of this game. Yeah,
exactly. And he wasn't. That's a concern too. A lot of concerns. Sorry, Force.
Now, Melbourne Rebels, Fiji and Andrea. Everyone was on the Fiji and Andrea bandwagon. That podcast I was talking about earlier that Sky make. All the, when it came to predictions, the ex-professionals were going, oh, yes, what they need to do is this. So I think they'll win. It's like, mate, I agree. They need to get an away win, right? But have you been watching them play? Because making picks on what you think and what you want them to do isn't what you're there for. You're supposed to be saying what you actually reckon will happen. The picking on the tipping thing was way in the Fiji and Andrew's side, and we were both like, "What the hell is happening here?" Because they haven't won away; they won two away games in Australia, they've won two games outside of Fiji. Both of those were home games in Australia when they were actually staying there. So they've technically never won an away game. Yes, they've won games outside of Fiji, but they've been home games when they were actually staying in Fiji. So from that point of view, that was I was amazed by how many people were on the Fiji and Andrew bandwagon for this one. And to be fair to the Drew, they started well in this game. And they took the lead. They went up. The Rebels showed some character. They didn't let that get them down. They came back, and then cards came into it, effectively. We had a yellow card just before half time. During that yellow card, the Rebels scored three tries, and bam, the game was over. There'll be lots of talk about the red cards, but the card actually that made the difference in this game was that yellow card. And after that, the Drua were just some extremely silly actions, but we'll come on to those afterwards. I'll give you a shot at the first half, and then we'll have a discussion about the second half.
If I want to nutshell that first half, the thing is, for the Rebels, that were the best thing for me is that they didn't get rattled in any case in this game. They were very composed, and they stuck to their guns about how they wanted to play this game. The fact they were down by 12 points, you didn't see them lose their style or lose their shapes or lose the plan of how they really, really wanted to play this game. So that's where it was most impressive. And it always kind of looked like a matter of time, didn't it, until they would take over the matchup in some way or another. They just looked like they were just pushing and edging their way, and they knew they had the time, they knew they had the players, they knew that they were in control of what they were doing. And ultimately, when they got the chance, like you say, they pounced straight onto that opportunity. But yeah, I mean, I was impressed by the draw in that first half. Really well. They scored some good tries. But I think, like we've spoken about a lot before on this as well, is when you play that 50-50 sort of style of game that the Drua do play and how they like to run and be exciting and fun, it comes off 50-50. And they really were 50-50 in this game. 50 was decent. 50, you know, of was pretty much diabolical. So that was kind of where it all ran out for them.
It also didn't help. They missed two conversions and a penalty in that first half. So they were all, another 7 points down, which they, if they'd had those 7 points up, then maybe it gives them a bit more breathing room. But even so, it was that yellow card came along. And look, shoulder to head. Absolutely. The player was dropping a bit, but not a lot. So I understand why it stayed at yellow. That's I'm not anti that, but it was a card. He needs to make more of an effort to get down for those. So theoretically, Fiji don't need to win any away games, but they need to win all their home games if they can guarantee a playoff slot. Well, absolutely no, but sure. We're talking about progress of the team, right? We want what we want to see is a competitive Fiji and Drua that helps produce a competitive Fiji national team. And the Fiji national team needs to learn to play away from home, not just in Fiji as well. That's part of what this crowd is supposed to do. So yes, from a pure Drua point of view, but it also does mean when they get to the finals, they're getting knocked out in round one because they have to travel away from home. So, but anyway, in the second half then, and the wheels really came off. Now, I think we've said a few times, or I've seen lots of comments of referees don't give out red cards anymore. Well, yes, they do. If you do stupid stuff. But generally, players don't do stupid stuff like elbowing head people in the face, in the head, straight down, and then headbutting a player. Both of those were straight red cards. No, there was no discussion at all around that. And we get all this kind of stuff about, the Pacific people very fun-loving, happy, blah, blah, blah. And then we see this stuff. You're like, hang on, guys. No. That's not the full story by any case. The wheels came off. Five penalties to Rebels, which is a fantastic showing. Getting under 10 is brilliant. It's very good. Getting five is brilliant. 15 by Fiji, a lot less so. Let's be honest. On the positive side of things, look, they won 8 out of their 9 scrums, 7 out of their nine lineouts. This was a decent set piece and stuff. So, I mean, from these sort of things, this was they got only 16 turnovers to the 20 by the Rebels. There were lots of decent things here, all undermined, all ripped apart by discipline. Because not only did they, there are two red cards and yellow to none by the Rebels on that one. Ill discipline, missing kicks, and only 40% from the tee, and the Rebels did what they need to do. There's some that both those players are in for ban time, right? They're missing games, three or so games, I guess, which is a massive loss for this team, especially Lemani, who kind of runs stuff for them. And of course, these are real red cards. They're not your 20 minutes either. Right now, okay. The one on 74 minutes, who cares? But the one on 57 minutes by Frank Lemani, as one of the big leaders of this team, that was madness. The other guy, look, he's off the bench prop. There's no excuse for headbutting. But for me, the Lemani one is the worst of the two from a player action point of view.
From such an experienced player too, and like I say, like a leader, a guy that carries this team, there was, brain explosion, shocking stuff. So, and the damage he did, I can't believe the guy that he did it to was wearing headgear like a scrum cap, and he was still pouring. How do you get that much contact, like to cut someone like that from your elbow through headgear to actually cut the skin to bleed like that? Baffles me that much contact went into that. Like, that wasn't just a poof, get out of the way.
In some ways, the scrum cap is designed to protect you from here, and there's like a zip or something down the back. And he's, so to be fair to him, maybe it's because he's caught the zip and used that. But anyway,
regardless, it's still a lot of blood. But that's what stunned me the most. But Lemani, that's shocker. Yeah, he needs some time away from the game. I think he's going to get quite a bit of time away from that. But look, for the positive for me, like, okay, draw. Look, you shot yourselves in the foot in that game. Really, really did. So I don't care about you. You're off to the bin. You're in the bin. You had a good chance. You had a real good chance to upset the Rebels there in a game that, okay, everyone thought you should have won, but realistically, you know, it would have been quite an upset. I have to give the props here to the Rebels. I have to give major props here to the Rebels and major props to Carter Gordon, because holy hell, he was literally, like we're going to talk about Damian McKenzie in the next game, he had a big target on, not his back, on his front, and he took some absolute pumping hits from these draw players and just got up. And if anything, it just made him better. The determination.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yep. He is now the leader in that back line because he doesn't have Kelleway anymore helping take some of that leadership away from him. So not only is that, but he is the guy. There's a lot more pressure on him to lead this team and lead that back line as well.
He's got Filippo. Dalgunu's still there. Now he's decided to play again. He's paying him.
When they moved him to the wing is when he scored his try. Play him on the wing.
I agree. I do agree with you on that one. But no, I mean, how many TNs do you see just get smoked like that and, you know, roll around and, you know, just take big hits? He took massive hits. And that's just the fact that he kept going up and just kept on fighting for it just shows me that I think he's really developing a lot this season. Is he the number one, number 10? I think he's got a long way to go. I get to, and for a lot of CEOs and that sort of option. But I've been really impressed by him. And I think it's his play. Sure, I feel like he kind of pushes the envelope a little bit with his penalties, going for the corner and overkicks a lot of them sometimes, silly things like that. But I think in the way of directing his backline around and the composure that the rest of the team had, whether that comes from maybe some leadership in the forwards, I don't know. But just how they stuck to their guns, keep their position, took their chances, kicked well, and took their opportunities when they had their opportunities was really, really big for them. And they kept the foot on the throat too, which I thought was quite impressive. They didn't just get ahead and then get ahead by, you know, more than seven and go, okay, I think we can just sit on this. No, they kept pumping away and kept putting the pressure on, and the draw just got more and more frustrated, as we can tell, as those red cards flowed in. But yeah, the massive props here to the Rebels. I thought they had a really, really good game, stood up, and, you know, that one cap, Matt Proctor, All Black, and they made a huge difference off the bench. He's not on a rest week.
Oh, look, this puts Rebels up into fifth on the table. Now, okay.
They were above the Chiefs.
The Reds have obviously had a the Chiefs had a game to play after that, right? Now, sure, the Reds have got a game to play who are behind them, but even so, the Rebels were one of those teams that everyone was saying, coming into the season, they're a bottom four team, they're not making playoffs. Now, Moana Pacifica are in ninth place on 9 points. Rebels are on 19 points. They're 10 points into the playoffs, the playoff places. Now, sure, they've still got minus 33 points against, and a points difference, which amazing that the fifth place team in a competition with 12 has got a minus points difference is amazing. But anyway, when well, they've got three try bonus points from their four wins. No losing bonus points. It kind of blows out that way. But this is rarefied territory for them. They're having a fantastic season, as opposed to what we thought they were going to do. This team very easily could have, as Simon's put further up in the chat, really hope the Western United Football Club thing happens and they get something. Yeah, absolutely. So you talk this, I can't remember what we talked about last week, but basically there's an opportunity for them to move potentially to another another ground. There's something about being uniquely blah, 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 consortium, yada. When I've read it, I can't see what's unique about it. It's a bunch of guys come together, put some money together for a team. But anyway, they reckon I got some sort of unique angle. Who cares? I couldn't see what the unique angle was. I think they should survive. I think they should be. They should be here next year. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I do think it needs to be a 12-team competition. That's having only four games this weekend told me this needs to be a 12-team competition. We can't survive with just four games a week. So to me. Great. Well, the Rebels are definitely one of the overperforming teams so far this season, in my opinion.
You know what would be really great too if this whole Western United thing goes ahead too, with that stadium change? It's like we've been saying, smaller stadium, fuller ground, better atmosphere, looks better on TV, we're better at the game, just better, 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 right? The Rebels have better feeling of support because they're not sitting there with, 60 people, 300 rows back going, go the Rebels! So that's great. I think it's a win-win-win, massive win. They keep their team. It's going to look better. They're going to whatever that stadium holds, I'm not 100% sure. But anyway, it's going to be better. But if that looks full, it's going to look like the best stadium in the whole competition because it's going to have full people. It's like Fiji, like that little stadium in Fiji we talked about in the pouring rain last round. It's packed. Doesn't matter that it's just a terrace and like a one-row stand. Who cares? Or you can't see that. You can just see people. And when you're panning a game of rugby, you can only see up, a few rows anyway of a stand, unless they do the wide shots. And that's a stat. If you see the Rebels game on TV next year and all you can see is people around the ground in those few rows or halfway up that stand, hey, best place for not only viewing on TV, but to creating atmosphere, to going to see live. That's a triple win for the Rebels. I can't wait till that happens.
Sure, and if they do make a finals or a semi-final or a final and host it, then they can move back to the big stadium in town where they will get a big crowd. I don't see anything wrong with that one for that. Now, there was also a racial slur. At Lamani, once he was sat on the sideline from some drunk fans. Totally unacceptable, and I've seen that the juror are asking for a lifetime ban for the guy if they can identify who it was.
He got kicked out. He got ejected.
Well, he got ejected, but they're now investigating, trying to figure out who he was. But
they could do that when they ejected him.
they should have done, but clearly, apparently not. As we say, administration and running the game isn't the strong point of Super Rugby. Absolutely, that kind of behaviour is totally unacceptable. Yep. And absolutely, lifetime ban, fine.
100%. Get rid of him.
Yep. Moving on then to another game that we'll probably don't need to talk much about.
No. Chiefs.
Chiefs 68, Moana Pacifica 12. Now, I did try and say that the Force were in it for 10 minutes by not allowing any scores. I'm not sure that Moana really were in this one. Okay, sure, the first try wasn't until 11 minutes. Even my notes are zero for this one because just like, what's the point? I do actually have some notes for the other games. Yeah, I'm not saying they're extensive. Dave McKenzie, poor show. Missing one of your 10 conversions. I mean, what kind of play is that? So apparently he missed out on Stephen Donald's record there for number of conversions. Cracking performance for them. And at the moment, the Moana are a bit of a problem, as are the Force, really, I guess, in that point of view. But look, they don't have a home ground. So off field, at least the Force off field are stable, right? You've got Twiggy behind them. Well, as long as Twiggy sticks around, but they've got a great home support base. They've got a good ground, etc. The Moana Pacifica don't even have that support base, really. They don't have home ground at the moment. This team needs a lot of work both on and off the pitch, unfortunately. Some lovely tries. Amoni Nauria showing that you can just jog around. And a player that's his composure, I think, is the most impressive thing from these. He's not snatching at balls. Now, admittedly, when you're winning, when it's coming easy, you don't necessarily need to as much more. And it'll be interesting to see how his composure lasts when they're actually under pressure. But his composure in this game was wonderful playing from fullback. I thought he was a pure winger, but this season he's been playing from fullback. And when Sean Stevenson's on All Blacks rest weeks or injured, I think he's doing a very good job out there, back there as well. So Triple T started on this one, and also got a try. It's pretty squad depth when your third choice scrum half is an All Black. Okay, not multi-cap, but at least an All Black. That's pretty impressive. Good game from the Chiefs. Can we move on?
Hey, I was professional and did write a couple of things down from this match. I knew I'd forget. I thought I should start doing this weekend because I always have trouble remembering what happened because it was so long ago. But what's that thing that we keep talking about? Every single week we talk about that one thing. Oh, lineouts. Oh, God. Moana just can't sort out that lineout. Look, when you lose nearly half of your lineouts that you get delivered, lose six out of the 16 of them, it's not going to be a good night for you, is it? So, look, that was a major factor for me. But I think what really killed me for this one, for Moana, was the way that they couldn't take on an attacker defensively individually. That is the horriblest way I could describe it at all. But when one Chiefs player attacked the line, there was two to three Moana defenders that would contact him. Which, when you can throw a pass in those minute moments before contact, you're straight away opening up two of your teammates. And then, hey, when the next guy does it to two players, you've opened up another four or five players, and then voila, look at that. You've got six guys all trotting down the sideline going, who wants to try? Highest bidder, run a little auction. Who's going to pick this one up? That was it for me.
There was a lot of, if you can execute, draw and pass, yes, you're in.
Yep. I do credit Moana. I think they had a game plan of shutting down McKenzie. And I kind of think they did a decent enough job of it because they absolutely, like Carter Gordon, they pumped him a few times, man. McKenzie took a hammering in that game. So they had a clear game plan. But I think, you know, they were trying to shut players down before they could expose the outside channels. And I think that is what they're going with. Flip side of that is, like I said, if you're committing too many guys to one guy, you're going to lose out wide. Now, if the Chiefs are going to get those passes out there, it just made it far too easy for them. So that was the biggest insight for Moana for me. They just didn't quite execute their game plan prop enough. But I thought their back three was very poor again with the kicks as well. The Chiefs would kick down and often find grass, and or they'll make a line break and there'll be no one home or a kick. You know, maybe having their fullback joining into the line too often was a bit of an issue for them as well. Prioritizing, I mean, when you're losing by that much, I guess, yeah, throw the extra player in because you could score a try. More often than not, it ended up the Chiefs turned over, kicked it forward, and then you've got props running outside with Nanai Satoru and Narawa and all those guys, which is just unfair to say the complete mismatch of the century. But yeah, aside from that, promising things. Yeah, they went for plan. They looked for it. I think they executed it poorly. But overall, the Chiefs are just far too good. I thought the Chiefs played really well, especially their flankers and most of their pack players at taking contact too, but not going to ground. I think they made a massive difference when you catch, draw, pass, take that contact, throw them away, and continue to follow the play and not actually get taken down in the tackle. Made a big difference because you're getting guys that were running support lines very, very well, very quickly. Satiti, the number eight, had a phenomenal game. He was destructive throughout that matchup. But, hey, most of them were for the Chiefs. They really looked like they were in a completely different class of their own in that game. But, yep, I mean, Moana, just work on that, right? Work on it. I could see where they're trying to go with it, but maybe they should have binned it after being down, what, geez, 40-odd nil or something like that. You know, just put that one in the back locker when you're down 35-5 or something like that. Just go to plan B, right? Have a second plan in action. But, yeah, well done, Chiefs. Look good. Players look nice. Let's see you in a real test. Similar speech to the Blues on that one.
Yeah, yeah.
These Hurricanes. Do they have Hurricanes next?
Yes, so we'll get on to that. The Moana Pacific are hosting the Reds in Whangarei next weekend. And he's like, yeah, it'd be good, interested to see what the turnout there is. Look, Whangarei has got a good stadium. They had it there for the Women's Rugby World Cup. So it's a decent stadium up there. It's the eighth biggest city in New Zealand. So there's potential for actually building up a fan base. Moana Pacific, base yourself out of Whangarei or base yourself out of County's Manukau Stadium in Pokeno. Choose one of those places. Sorry?
No one likes coming to Southland. It's always cold.
You can hardly say you've got a big Pacifica population down there, though, is it? That's the links and your flights are much better from. I would go Whangarei or being realistic here as to where they could actually base themselves.
Could we get maybe a Japanese Chinese team or maybe an Indian team would go quite well down here support wise anyway.
So I think either Whangarei or would be a better place rather than North Harbour. On that one. So I think North Harbour and Northland should actually get their own Super Rugby franchise together. From that one. Nico Jones played. Always felt sorry for him from the media hype that when he was a schoolboy player. Look, I mean, clearly coming through with your dad being one of the potentially or in his time anyway was. What was in an all-time All Blacks team, now perhaps being superseded by either a Kano or a Richard McCaw since then. But either way, you're talking about one of the absolute legends of the All Blacks. And then to come through with that name on your back, trying to make it as a professional player, yeah, there's going to be a certain amount of pressure, let's be honest. He's got a couple of games now. And it's interesting that he's going through Moana rather than a New Zealand Super Rugby franchise. So maybe he's looking at playing for Samoa. We'll see.
Good on him.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, make your own path, mate. Go your own way rather than the way that's... good luck to you.
You don't want to play through New Zealand franchise. Unless you're going to completely take it by storm. Because wasn't he in the Blues catchment and they were like, no, I don't want him? Or they just kind of...
Yeah,
he played the NPC, didn't he? Yeah. So, look, I mean, unless he's storming the competition and being incredible, he's never going to live up to that hype. And he's always going to get compared to that hype. I say good on it. That's a way better path for him to go. Yeah, you burn it out. You play your own rules and make your own trail, your own laser and trail. That's the word. Yep. Go, Nico.
Final game of the round then. Brumbies versus the Waratahs. Look, the Brumbies dominated the first half and only led 9-3 heading towards halftime. And you're like, wow, they really have not got the points that they should have had. Now, a try on halftime, taking out 16-3 at halftime, meant they actually did have that kind of lead, that two-score lead. I heard the Anthems franchise. Oh, on the franchise in Major League Rugby. Okay. Maybe we'll head over to Major League Rugby. There have been players who've gone over there and come back better players, so it's not actually a bad move to go and have a bit of a play some time in Major League Rugby as well. At halftime, 16-3 And you're thinking, wow, well, heading up towards a 9-3. Wow, how have the Waratahs kept themselves in this? And then, but yeah, they just slipped that one just on half time. And then after that, really, the Brumbies kind of managed to pull away. Lovely little Valentina to see Valentino playing, showing some of his class to be able to go through his try as well, for his more of his barnstorming running. I think perhaps haven't seen as much of recently that we kind of knew him for. So good to see that coming through, I thought, as well, in that one. But again, a lot of CO penalty kind of class in keeping the or game management class that we're seeing more from this season as well. So yeah, a grown-up player there. Sure, as I mentioned, the super sub, Deborah Sini, coming on to close things out. But yeah, it's good to this Brumbies team really has sort of hit its stride now.
I mean, the first half of this game, the weather was ruler, because they all come running out and it was like, oh, it's not too bad. There's a little bit of misty stuff. And then it really crept itself. And that changed that whole game. That first half was really much just a jewel of getting yourself in a good position and trying to get an opportunity to take a kick, because it was like that sort of rain that doesn't look like it's much, but absolutely soaks you. That made a massive difference that first half when that weather started to come through. So it turned into a kick battle. It turned into a territory battle. No one wanted to really run the ball or try anything too risky or do anything outrageous. And then, of course, any chances you get that were within kicking range were taken in that first half. So not surprising not seeing any tries in that first 40 minutes, bar that one right at the very, very end. But this the lack of either side wanting to risk anything in that first half, because the second half was completely different. The rain went away and the game changed completely. And I think the Brumbies really adjusted to that extremely well with, I guess, Lolosio deserves all that credit for the way he changed the team's playing, going for, instead of just 100% territory, tried to use the team a bit more. But I think the big, big difference in that second half, a really good short kicking game from the Brumbies, played a lot of little balls just over the top. Like we see the All Blacks do quite a lot when they want to kind of draw fullbacks or back three players forward, but not let them sit back. They did very well at that. So they caught the Waratahs defense out a lot of times with those, getting good easy meters. But more so than that, and I think as the game wore on, the Brumbies took over this matchup with just structure. When they hit rucks, everyone just went, every ruck was like a set piece to this Brumbies team, almost the way they were going, because everyone found perfect positioning for what seemed like scrum plays or line out plays. There were decoy runners, there were second, third waves of deep runners, players hitting angled runs. It was really amazing that they could set that sort of stuff up so quickly at each and every ruck. And they try to, the man of the moment, Charlie Kao, at the end there was, I think, a product of that, because when you watch that try but don't see where the ball come from, you would swear it was from a scrum. You're like, how did number 8 get out there so fast? But the fact that you're looking and go, it's a ruck. And yet we've got all this structured set piece like movement in a back line and players knowing exactly where they're going, like they've been training this 100 times over. That was something that really stood out to me from the Brumbies. So that was incredible. And look, when you've got an attack that can decoy and switch and make decisions on point like that so quickly, I felt sorry for the Waratahs, because that was incredibly hard to defend. And then we got a guy like Charlie Cowell on the outside. It's like, well, you know, put him on the wing. He's just as good. That was a little bit unfair. But yeah, the Brumbies took over once they got that structure rolling in the second 40, man. If they could do that against any team, boy, add that to their maul, add that to their kicking game. They are, like you say, really coming good at the right time, and they are going to be incredibly hard to beat, because honestly, I don't think the Waratahs really played that badly. They were just outclassed massively in that second half by a very, very good Brumbies performance.
Look, the Brumbies team, okay, they missed a bunch of tackles, missing 30 tackles this game, which... But still, they tackled all the way to the end, because the Hooters up and they held the player up over the line. They've won this game. It doesn't really matter at the end of the day whether they score or not. Maybe there was a try bonus point in it. But either way, to play all the way to the end and hold the player up shows, yeah, that not only is those structure pieces, but the effort value is in there as well from this team, which is very good. So yeah, Brumbies initially a lot of people down on them, but hey, they now sit third in the table. But the Blues, Hurricanes, and Brumbies all on 27 points. Now the Hurricanes do have a game in hand. So they've had their rest week already. Next up, though, they're all 4 points clear of the Chiefs, who are again 4 points clear of the Rebels on 19 points. Then you've got the Reds on 16, and the Andrua on 13. The last team in the top eight are the Highlanders on 11. Now, of those teams, the Reds and the Highlanders still have got a game to play, though. So the Reds could go above the Rebels, and the Highlanders also could go above the Andrua if they win their game in hand. Into the bottom four teams that are outside the playoffs then. Moana Pacifica, only 2 points behind the Highlanders, but they've played one more game. The Tars, a point back. The Crusaders on 6 points, 2 points back. But we've looked at their running, and we think it's a good chance they can win all the rest of their games which is what they're going to need to do, let's be honest. And then finally, the Western Force at the bottom there on 5 points. If you're looking at points difference, kind of thing, as a sign of kind of rather than just pure points, because obviously the bit of the balance in some of the teams they've played, the Moana Pacifica minus 143 are the worst team on that one. So yes, they've got two wins, but boy oh boy, with 289 points conceded, they've got the leakiest defense in the league. After them come the Force, minus 111. Having conceded 248 points in this one. The Waratahs, for example, same number of games, but 205 points. They've let in 40 less than the Force and 80 less than Moana, but they're behind the Moana in that one. So you'd expect the Tars to come good over time. There's some foundations there. Whereas you kind of wonder with Moana, with the Force, are the foundations there to actually be able to play on that one. So that's that's on the points. For Crusaders still with the fewest points scored, but then again they got a game in hand and they've got that win now, which is a big thing. We did say all along that their problem was scoring points. Their defense actually still has been pretty decent. If you're just doing on points against or on defense, then they would be fourth in the table at the moment. Points for the teams that score the most points, the Chiefs at the moment with 266, followed by the Blues at 277, and then the Hurricanes at 226, but obviously the Canes with that game in hand as well. Any kind of thoughts on the table or where teams sit at the moment?
I think it's still a lot of water to go under the table bridge, but.
Under the table. I agree. Bridge. What's a table bridge?
Well, under the bridge, that is the table. Look, oh, okay. Moana and the Western Force are the ones under pressure, I feel like. Massively. They're the ones that need wins and don't look like winning. Whereas I feel the Waratahs and the Crusaders, both in the same boat, they need wins, but I can see them beating a lot of the teams outside of maybe those top six. Hey, honestly, outside of the top four, I think the Waratahs are definitely good enough to beat any of those teams on their day at home, especially.
Top six, including the Rebels. Wow.
I looked at the Reds and I'm like, nah, the Reds. And then I thought, well, the Reds have been a bit shaky too lately. So, hey, that bye week off for the Reds is going to be huge because, look, they finished off that pre-bye last couple of rounds very, very poorly. So that's going to be massive for them to bounce back. But, yeah, otherwise, Highlanders want to pick up a win very soon and hold on to that top eight. That's going to be massive for them if they want to finish inside those places. So, yeah, a lot of pressure on a lot of teams. But, yeah, if you want to see performers, I think you've got to perform against those top four teams. They are your benchmark. I still think the Hurricanes are the team.
So, before we get on to the games for next week, though, I'm going to just throw some stats at you because it's a bit of fun here. So, Tool is the top try scorer with the Brumbies. Yes. Followed by Satutu, Ratama, and Faisler from the and also Massey. So those are the next crowd down. This is rather Ratima being a scrum half. Then there being actually that high up. That's that was a bit of a surprise.
He's got a lot of those tries off shoulders though on support lines. You see him. He's always he follows play very like Aaron Smith did it decently. I think Ratima does it exquisitely well.
Yep. Clean breaks. Tool again leads the way on that one with Tia in second place. A bit of a surprise. Now, we said he's playing well, but I wouldn't have said that he was kind of ahead of players necessarily than players like Talia, example, who are players I would normally kind of put out. But Talia's down with 7 compared to Tia with 11. So Morby with 10 there rounds out the top 3. And then meters gained. Yeah, love this one.
No. Go away, Hoskins.
Caleb Clark at the top there with 558 meters.
Yeah.
Then we're into the fullbacks. Tom Wright with 522 and Sean Stevenson with 522 as well. But yes, Caleb Clark. Wow.
Outside of fullbacks, what's your top 3?
So what you'd so he goes Clark, Wright, Stevenson, Massey, Ratumada, Neepkins, Talia. So clearly with both Clark and Talia there in that top 6. Yep. And then Tool as well, another winger. So yeah, so it is back 3 players, obviously on the whole. Campbell, Nana Satoro. Oh, sorry, Ratumada Tubuti Neepkins is down there. I've got it mixed up with Ratumada, the Drua player, was up there in 4th place. I'm just I've been working 10 days on the bounce. I've not had a day off since Good Friday, so I am not totally with it, folks, at the moment. I'll admit.
You just love those Drua names.
I just read it and just thought of the Highlands player by accident. Whoops.
He should be 4th though. Let's be honest.
He's been playing really well. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So yes. So so interesting ones there.
Corey Tool, man. Corey Tool's the guy. Watch out.
If he is not, I mean, yeah, he's got to be surely in the Wallaby squad.
He's not a Wallaby this season. There will be riots. There will be riots. Shane will be out there and he'll have, I don't know, something. He'll be hitting people with it. My God, if he's not, I mean, Wallabies, look, there's a number of good players. Like, we've spoken about this before, but if you think the Wallabies are going to be crap this year, if you think the Wallabies are going to be an easy beat next year for the Lions, sorry.
And I mean, initially, we're kind of like, when the first couple of rounds, like, oh, yeah, Tool's doing well, but, you know, there's an awful lot of good wingers in Australia. And now we're kind of like, yeah, Tool's in.
He's class. Yep. They got a few. Like, I quite like Peach. Peach is quite good at the Waratahs. And it's just guys with pace, too. It's like just genuine, fast finishes. That, you know, you couple them with, you know, a Tool with a Callaway. And then, like, some of those hard-running midfielders they've got as well. I mean, they could be quite fun, you know, when we go through your Fakitis and guys like that who are going to draw defenders. And then you got to look out. And Wanganitsu Aussie's out there as well. Jeez, I forgot about him. Boy, they could cause issues, especially if they can get that pack to work, right? That's the problem. The front row and the back row. Incredible players, just the commitment levels. If they can get 110 out of those guys. You know, I talked about Valentini before having a good game. He needs that every game. If he can do that in the Wallabies jumper and then have guys like Tool and outside, look out. It's fire.
So let's look forward then. Next weekend, the first game is up at Seminoff Stadium up in Whangarei, up in Northland, where Moana Pacifica are going to host the Queensland Reds. Now, you mentioned that Reds came into the bye week so with some not great results. Just to run through their previous round, they lost to the Brumbies by a point at home. Mm-hmm. But before that, lost to the Force, 40-31 over in Perth. And then before that, lost beat the Rebels 26-53. So it's been a bit up and down. But even so, I think the way that the Moana have been going, I don't think you can back them at the moment. I've got to back the Reds.
Yeah, Reds 100%. I think there'll be some pretty harsh things gone on in that Reds camp over the last 2 weeks in the build-up to this. There would have been a bit of time off, and there would have been some, I'm not sure about hard work training, but a lot of reviewing and looking at where they've gone wrong, because, boy, they should have won that Brumbies game. The Western Force out-tacticked them, but the Brumbies just kind of out-finished them. And so I think there's a number of areas. So I think this could be, sadly for Moana, this is a game where it could be like the Reds are going to look for more at their performance rather than the scoreboard, knowing that if they do what they should execute, the score will take care of itself. So it could get a bit ruthless, because they're going to be like, well, I've still got work to do. I don't care if it's 45-3. I've still got things I need to accomplish. So brace yourself, Moana. Pucker up. It could be a nasty one.
Next up, then, we've got the Waratahs versus the Crusaders. Mm. That last game, 91% of pickers are going with Reds, and the TAB has the Reds $1.20 compared to $4.50 for Moana. So everyone is going Reds.
$1.20 is not bad.
Sorry? Yeah, no,
that's right. It's not bad. Well,
They're the shortest odds in the entire weekend. They're the highest favourites this weekend.
Wow. I mean, to me, that's a sure thing. And $1.20 off it, yeah, that's quite a good money. I'll be on that.
So the next
put
one.
The house on it. Yep.
No, don't put the house there. We do not provide investment advice. Jeez, you're going to bankrupt me. Next up is the Waratahs versus the Crusaders. Prior to the Chiefs game, we might have been a bit kind of thinking, you know what? Look, the Waratahs because they beat the Crusaders in round two, didn't they, from memory, already. So in that super round, so kind of thinking, actually, yeah, look, yeah. Because they beat the Crusaders 24-37 in Melbourne. So we're kind of thinking, yeah, look, if the Crusaders, this is where the Crusaders have to start winning, absolutely. Having had that Chiefs win already, I just can't see anyone else but the Crusaders this one. I think that's the thing that's going to start that ball rolling.
I'm sitting on a fence on this one until I see lineups. I really am, because we've seen all the talk about who's coming back and who's going to be saving the Crusaders and big return of people. If they come back, yeah. If we see a resemblance of what we kind of thought the Crusaders would be this year, then yeah, I'm going with them. If we don't, if it's like, hey, these guys need another week, Allianz Stadium, it's in New South Wales. And again, like the Waratahs weren't bad against the Brumbies. The Brumbies, I just thought, were really, 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 really good. If those players aren't returning, if we don't see the Blackadders back, you know, guys that can make a genuine difference, I would err on the side of the Waratahs on this one. But on the proviso that we've been told that those players will be back, I would lean towards the Crusaders. So, yeah, that one I'll sit on till Wednesday night.
Okay. The Crusaders, by the way, 86% of the pickers are picking that one. And the TAB have got them at $1.25 compared to $4 for
Based
the
on their last performance. Based on their it last is. Performance, people. Come on.
Next up, then. This is an interesting one. So Hurricanes versus the Chiefs. The TAB have got the Chiefs as favourites at $1.72 ahead of the Hurricanes at $2.15. The pickers have gone 57% Hurricanes, 43% Chiefs. So the pickers are going Hurricanes, the TAB are going Chiefs, and look, the Hurricanes are unbeaten. I'm going Hurricanes. Because one of the things we asked the question a few weeks back was, is the Hurricanes results or the table position based on having an easy draw? We went through it and went, no. They've beaten the Crusaders, they've beaten the Chiefs, they've beaten the Blues. It was not down to purely just having an easy draw. They are playing well. Now, they've had a week off. Can they contain? Hopefully they've managed to continue that momentum. The Chiefs have come off the back of losing to the Crusaders and then beating that easy game against Moana. But yes, I'm going with the Hurricanes on this one.
I thought we were going to disagree. I thought you were going to be a bandwagoner and jump on the back of Damien McKenzie. No, Hurricanes all the way, 150,000,000% Hurricanes. Not even a shadow of a doubt in my prediction on this one. Canes, look, Chiefs struggle against teams that are going to front up in the pack and a team that is going to give you issues on attack. And I think the Hurricanes are going to give both of those to the Chiefs. Now we get to see this. See, this is the game. Is McKenzie really as good as he is? As he's been called against the Reds? He sure as hell wasn't. That's a team with a good pack. Now I want to see how he's going to go against the Hurricanes. This is, hey, and Brett Cameron, hey, you could really show up here. You have a really good game. Eyes are on that 10 jumper. The other guy, remember, you've got a 10 jumper too. Here's a chance. Massive chance. Kane's over for me. Yep. No doubt.
Look, I still think D-Max is a very good player. Don't get me wrong. But it's about team here, not about player. So it's the
15.
Yeah, 15. Well, 20, 23 nowadays.
He's a very good
15. D-Max, very good 15. Sorry, I think they're 15 players. So it's about the team. It's not about the player. And that's why I'm going with Hurricanes on this one. For my All Blacks 10, D-Mac. But for my pick my pick this week, Hurricanes.
You're only going with D-Mac because you want England to win that series. And you know that Ben Earl is going to give Damien McKenzie nightmares. I know that Ben Earl is going to give Damien McKenzie nightmares.
Right then. Anyway.
No argument. You see, he didn't argue. That's exactly what he's thinking.
Simon says, "I trust the TAB more than the pickers." Yes, absolutely. I mean, last week the pickers went all with Fijian and Drew, and we're like, "What the hell?" Sorry, definite immediacy biased on that one. Now then, what I had difficulty with is the Rebels versus the Highlanders. So
why? I can't see why you would.
So I was going to go Rebels, and then I looked at the Rebels results as to where their wins came from, and I was like, "Hang on, the Rebels, sure, the Rebels sit fifth in the table, right? But the Rebels so far have beaten the Drua at home. Now, admittedly, this is a home game, but they've also beaten the Waratahs away. They've lost to the Hurricanes. They lost to the Reds." They beat Moana Pacifica. They beat the Force. So, lost the Brumbies. So, their position is off the back of beating the Force, Moana, and the Drua at home. So, three of the bottom four teams. Okay, not technically bottom four because Crusade is a second bottom, but three of the weaker teams in this one. And so, hence, to my mind, that position is quite heavily stacked on who they've played so far. And therefore, I'm going to go with Highlanders in this one.
Who are the Highlanders beaten? Moana and who was their other win? Wasn't anyone good? Force? I know they beat Moana in round one.
So
round two, they lost to the Blues.
Okay, so they lost to the Hurricanes, lost to the Chiefs.
They beat the Waratahs.
Beat the Waratahs.
Yes.
Lost to the Blues.
So couldn't you say this? Doesn't that argument work? The same way, Highlanders have only beaten the Waratahs and Allianz is a good. I think that's a good result. I think that's a good result. But at home, beating Moana, and they didn't do it that convincingly from memory, was it? It was only what was the score there? 35-21. Scoreboard exaggerates that scoreline. And like, I went up head over heart on this one, and I got flustered by looking at the numbers and seeing 78% of people back in the Highlanders, and I thought, well, my heart is justified if 78% of people agree with me. But honestly, the Rebels could win this one very easily. 78-22, I think that is harsh on the Rebels. I would, if I was going to give a percentage of chance, I'd say like 55-45, maybe. Like even to say that to the Highlanders is really rough, but this is a real 50-50. But if the Highlanders hit their mark, it's going to come down to who executes best. It really is. Both of these sides have the capability to be really good. Both of these sides have the capabilities to be really awful. And for the Highlanders to win this game, they need to turn up and play rugby before the hour mark, okay? The first 60 minutes is not practice run. That is actually game time. You do the practice run before you go on main field, all right? Or before, you know, you take your training stuff off. That's key. Because the Rebels could very easily run up here. Oh, no, they could kick their way, a try, a couple of penalties, you know, 15 points on the board to nil before the Highlanders decide they actually want to play rugby. they can make it a hard night. So the first half / 60 minutes is going to be massive because we know the Highlanders will come home strong. If they're within 10 points, they will win this game in the last 20 minutes, the Highlanders. If they're gone more by then, they're in trouble. So Rebels, they want to get out of the blocks, hit them hard. Highlanders want to actually show up in that first half. That's big thing for me. But yeah, I'm backing everyone else and going with, you know, justification on my heart. Go the Highlanders. And they've had a week off to rest, right? Are the Rebels going to start getting tired?
Well, yeah, again,
depends on straws. Yeah. 8 rounds, and it's like, oh, they're tired. Yeah, right.
There is, actually, the positive momentum for the Rebels is actually good. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've said at home they've not had to travel between these two games as well. So, so from that point of view, fatigue shouldn't be too big an issue. So I think. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, the 22.78% is not a is not reflective.
What's the TAB?
The TAB have got the Highlanders at $1.60, and Rebels at $2.45.
Nah, that's harsh. The fact that if this is a full-size bar, I would say the Highlanders 60-40. Amy Parker, I kind of would even just nudge Rebels like 52-48. You know, really, really close. The fact that it's Amy Park in Melbourne, it's an equaliser. It really, really is. And this is a team that, if your Carter Gordons have a good game, it could show up. It really could show up. Behind this, I don't think, apart from Ratamaitavuki Nepens, he's the only one that's really attackingly being like, hey, I'm a threat. I am going to cause you trouble. Even Tabataba Nawa, he runs into people, but he's not really done what he did last season. You know, he's a threat, but I don't think he's shown enough. Outside of no one else has really shown me anything in the Highlanders that's really going to make a team fear them, in all honesty.
And that shows on the points scored, because the Highlanders are third lowest points scored.
Yeah.
Only the Crusaders and the Force have scored less points than them so far.
Highest scoring team in the South Island. Come on.
Until the Crusaders play the Waratahs.
it's a small victories in life. Yeah.
Are we algorithms? Are we going purely numbers? No. Look, there is a whole bunch of historical bias in our viewing of these ones. I've played picking games so many times and just gone, you know what? I'm going to go against my rule of just pick the New Zealand team, and boy, it's burnt me. So you do. There is definitely an element of Super Rugby. Going back to when we had South Africa in there as well, you always go, okay, Super Rugby predictions, pick the New Zealand team. Right, then look at the teams and figure out who you're going to pick. But first off, that's your default. Always just pick the New Zealand team.
Pick the other New Zealand teams, and then pick the remaining home teams.
You wouldn't do too. You wouldn't go far wrong. With your picking, if you just went, say, okay, if your New Zealand team's playing against a non-New Zealand team, pick the New Zealand team. On that one. Cool. So there we are, folks. That's what it's going to be like. So the Friday night ones, perhaps not to... if you want to go out Friday night. You're not going to miss too much with Moana versus Reds and Waratahs versus Crusaders. But Saturday night is definitely a night in. For the Canes versus the Chiefs, followed by Rebels versus the Highlanders. Are the two games for this weekend. We'll be back on Monday at 8 p.m. To go through all of the action from the weekend and to look forward to the next weekend and pick out any kind of little rugby news stories we fancy having a chat about as well. Simon says, you recommend we watch the NRL on Friday night? No, I recommend you go out drinking and clubbing on Friday night. Actually, go have a life, okay? Have a life, get out there. Enjoy yourselves on that one. The channel will be back on Wednesday with our NRL show on that note at 8 p.m. as well. So with the boys talking all the stuff of up the wars and all of that kind of stuff. Apparently the Wellington Phoenix are on Friday night as well. Yeah, that's football. Who cares?
Yeah, let's go to the Knicks. Well, not top of the table anymore.
I have absolutely no idea on that one at all. What I do know is that from a cycling point of view, Ardennes Week kicks off this weekend as well. So, a lot of you have no idea what I'm talking about.
The NBA playoffs start soon as well. So we're in the last few games of the NBA regular season. So I think
this weekend, if you can tell us a weekend before, don't give us in 6 weekends time or 3 weekends.
No. I'm saying the last few rounds of the NBA, you know, the NBA plays like 27 million games a day, right? So the last few rounds means the next 2 days. So I'm pretty sure the playoffs start next week. It's Monday, isn't it? So I think the end of this week, they're looking like starting. There's only a couple of regular season games left for teams. So, it's all in the big playoffs race at the moment. Everyone's wanting to avoid the play-in. Everyone's trying to get into the playoffs. So, baseball starting back up again. NHL is just getting back underway as well. It's just been Mania weekend. So love that. That's all up in the hype. So, man, it's all going. Why wouldn't you want to live in America?
Just a play-in tournament from the 16th to the 19th of April, which means kicks off next Tuesday.
That's a play-in.
And then the actual playoffs themselves begin on the 20th.
Yeah, so the play-in is 6 to 10. So a week off for those last two spaces.
Yep. Oh, so, boy.
Yeah. Down the Lakers. Overly
complicated. What a mess. Anyway, stay safe, everybody, and catch you all next Monday.
Pacers beat the Thunder last days ago.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.